Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins. Bernie Sanders is an unabashed lefty. The senator from Vermont claims the mantle of independent. He's also called a liberal, a progressive, and he refers to himself as an independent socialist. He's got some big ideas about how to rein in big banks, cut defense spending, repair the social safety net, and help the middle class. His supporters want him to run for president. He hasn't quite made the leap just yet. Even so, he's hitting all the hot campaign spots. He's made 4 trips to Iowa this year. He's been to New Hampshire, California, South Carolina, elsewhere. He now joins us from back home in Vermont. Senator Bernie Sanders, nice to have you back on Radio Boston.
Good to be with you, Lisa.
Thanks also for agreeing to take phone calls. So a shout out to our listeners now. You can be a part of this conversation. We hope you will be. What is your question for Bernie Sanders? What do you want him to do in the Senate? What do you want the next president of the United States, regardless of who it is, to do? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Again, that's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston, and we'll try to get as many phone calls as we possibly can in the next few minutes. Senator, when Congress meets again next year, you're going to be the ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee. How will you be doing things differently, given the fact that the GOP will now be in control of the Senate?
Well, Lisa, I'm going to be very aggressive, and I hope the entire committee will be aggressive, to say no to a Republican agenda which comes down to an effort on their part to cut Social Security, cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut education, cut nutrition programs, cut the Environmental Protection Agency, and give huge tax breaks to the wealthy and large corporations. I think that is an agenda that may work very well for the billionaire class, but it'll be a disaster for ordinary Americans. And by the way, it is something that the American people do not want.
I think we should take some of those issues individually, though. Let's start off with entitlement programs, the huge entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare. As you say, Republicans have been wanting to cut both of those. This is on the agenda for next year. Congressman Paul Ryan has laid out a blueprint for that. You oppose it. Why?
Why? Because it will be a disaster for tens and tens of millions of Americans, including many senior citizens and disabled vets and people with disabilities. The truth of the matter is that poverty among seniors in America is growing, and if you cut Social Security, it's going to lead to a great deal of suffering. Second of all, it is absolutely untrue for my Republican colleagues to be talking about Social Security, quote-unquote, going broke. This is not true. Social Security is $2.7 trillion in its trust fund right now. It can pay out every benefit for the next 19 years. Our job, in my view, is to expand Social Security benefits because many seniors can't make it on $12,000 or $14,000 a year. I am vigorously opposed to Ryan's idea of converting Medicare into a voucher program by which you will give eligible seniors something like $8,000 and then have them go out to a private insurance company to get the insurance that they need. If you are 75 or 80 and you're dealing with cancer or heart disease or serious illness, that $8,000 in a private insurance company is not going to get you very far.
These two, let me just interrupt there for a second, because the numbers that you quoted are extremely frightening numbers for many people who see these entitlement programs as having a voracious appetite, eating up an enormous amount of the federal budget. The numbers, many say, show that the programs are basically going to break the back of the nation if something isn't done and if they're not cut.
Absolutely untrue. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what the Koch brothers and the billionaires who want to end Social Security as we know it, that's what they say, but it's just not true. As I think all of the listeners know, Social Security hasn't contributed a nickel to the deficit because it's funded by the payroll tax, 6.2% coming from employees and the same amount coming from employers. So it is not a deficit issue. The fact of the matter is that we can expand Social Security benefits and extend the life of Social Security by lifting the cap on taxable income. Right now, that cap is $117,000. That means a millionaire contributes the same amount as somebody making $117,000. If you lift the cap and you start at $250,000, which is what I propose, You can extend Social Security for decades and, in fact, expand benefits. And that's what we should be doing.
When you speak up in that way in the Senate, though, especially as head of the Senate Budget Committee, do you expect Democrats to line up behind you?
I think the vast majority of them will. Perhaps not all, but most of them will. And so will the American people. The American people are very, very clear that there's something wrong when our middle class continues to collapse, when we have an increase in poverty among seniors, and 95% of all new income generated in recent years goes to the top 1%. And when we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, and worse in this country than any time since 1929. So I think that the Republican agenda, not only is it a disaster for working families and the elderly, but it's also extremely unpopular. And one of my jobs as the new ranking member of that committee is to get the word out to the American people as to exactly what the Republicans are proposing.
When you say that the American people are upset and in many ways very angry at, as you say, billionaires who are in Congress, I wonder if you can talk more about income inequality, which you've been mentioning now, because it's an issue that Democrats as well talk about. It is demonstrable in this country. There is no question, even among many Republicans, that it's happening. But if it is such a problem, then why doesn't that animate voters in red states?
Well, that's a good question. Let's talk about the reality. Today, the top 1% owns almost 42% of the financial wealth of America. Amazingly enough, Lisa, the bottom 60% owns all of 1.7%. And you have, I mean, the situation is so absurd that you have one family, the Walton family that owns Walmart, owning more wealth alone, one family, than the bottom 40% of the American people. And as I mentioned a moment ago, today in terms of income, 95% of all new income since the Wall Street crash is going to the top 1%. You say, well, why doesn't that animate people? Why doesn't it get people involved politically? And I think the answer speaks to the fact that in this recent election of a month ago, something like 63% of the American people didn't vote. And I think what that tells me is that large numbers of young people and working people are essentially giving up on the political process. And they know it either intellectually or instinctually in their guts, that it really doesn't matter, that you have a Congress largely controlled by very, very wealthy, powerful special interests, Wall Street.
But the voter turnout has been going steadily down. This is not just since Republicans have
No, that's control. Right. No, it has been going. That's right. But this one was a total disaster. I think in Vermont, for example, it went down to its lowest point ever. And nationally, you have a situation where 80% of low-income working people don't even vote. So the question is, you're asking me why, and I would say it is that people are hurting. Real unemployment is close to 11%, youth unemployment 20%, college debt extraordinarily high, and people look to Washington and they say, you know what, these guys aren't going to do anything. They're not worried about the middle class of working families. Why should I vote? And how you change that is not easy. Let me tell you, it is not easy. How you give people faith that government can do something when, in fact, every day government does virtually nothing for ordinary people. That is the challenge of our time.
Let me ask you before we go to a few callers. When you are out and about now in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina as well, and, of course, in Vermont, too, what do you hear from people, not just your constituents? Let's assume that some of those who show up would not necessarily be supporters of yours but want to find out more about your ideas. What do you ask them, and what is foremost on their minds?
Whether or not their kids, if they're older people, whether or not their kids are going to have a standard of living which, for the first time in the modern history of America, will be lower than theirs. People are very worried about their kids. Will their kids be able to go to college? Will their kids leave college with horrendous debt yoked around their neck? Will they be able to retire with dignity? Half the families in America have less than $10,000 in savings. What does that mean in terms of retirement? Why is government so ineffectual? Why do politicians keep representing the big money interests and not working families?
Give me your answer to that last one.
I think the answer has a lot to do with campaign finance. To get elected to, statewide office, increasingly you need a lot of money, and the money comes from the wealthy and the powerful, and people end up working for the people who fund them.
We have some phone calls, several callers calling in right now. Why don't we take Let's see. John calling from Genoa, Ohio, on line 5. John, what's your question for the senator?
Hey, Senator Sanders. I'm a big fan. My question is, just like you were touching on in campaign finance reform, what do you think can be done without Citizens United decision being turned over? Or do you think that's the only way any real progress will be made with campaign finance reform?
John, thank you for that. And actually, Senator, I'm just going to ask you, for those who don't know, remind us of the Citizens United ruling.
Yeah, Citizens United is a Supreme Court decision made 4 years ago, which basically allows corporations and the wealthiest people in this country to spend as much money as they want through independent expenditures. And that's why we're seeing the huge increase in the amount of money being spent in politics in recent years. It is a total disaster. What it says is the billionaires, hey, you got it. You can elect anybody you want. This country belongs to you. And I think we have got to work very hard, John, A, to overturn Citizens United. We've got about 17 states now on record wanting to overturn it, hundreds and hundreds of cities, and we've got to continue along that path. If the billionaires, like the Koch brothers and others, can spend unlimited sums of money, I think the very foundation of American democracy is being undermined. Second of all, I think we've got to not only overturn Citizens United, we have to move to public funding of elections, where we will have debates then on ideas rather than campaigns in which candidates spend unbelievable amounts of money simply raising funds for their effort.
Thank you very much for that good question, John. Let me ask you about other financial issues. I mean, when we talk about, for instance, universal pre-kindergarten, pre-K, to prep young kids for kindergarten, when we talk about other issues, including campaign finance reform, publicly funded campaigns, and expanding Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, where would all that money come from? Because you know that that is the bottom line question for so many issues.
Right. Well, first of all, getting back to the reality that right now we have massive income and wealth inequality. In terms of corporate taxes, we are losing well over $100 billion every year because large corporations stash their money in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda. We have major profitable corporations who every year pay zero in taxes. Something like one out of four corporations doesn't pay anything in taxes. So I think what we have got to say to these large corporations, sorry, you are part of the United States of America. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. Our child care system is a total disaster. And we are going to invest. We're going to hire wonderfully qualified people to do child care. We're going to make sure that college education in America is affordable. Yes, it is going to cost money. You're right. But we're going to ask the wealthy and large corporations to start paying their fair share of taxes. Also, I think we can take a hard look at military spending. My Republican friends want to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, but they also want to expand military spending. Right now, we are spending almost as much as the rest of the world combined on military, over $600 billion a year, and yet the DOD, Department of Defense, can't even audit their own budget. So I think we could take a hard look at military spending. We need a strong defense, but we can make some cuts there.
All right. There are some cuts coming up in terms of military benefits. We know that from the most recent budget. Let's go to Len calling from Brookline, Massachusetts.
Hi, Senator. Two of the most popular government programs we have, Social Security and Medicare, are essentially socialist programs, but that's not how Americans think of them. And so I'm wondering whether you think it's possible to break the taboo on a word that maybe stops Americans from recognizing socialism when they see it and when, in fact, they like it. And I think about
the efforts made
after Barry Goldwater lost to make an argument in favor of conservative principles. I'm not sure Democrats have matched them in that way. And I'm wondering how you break down the obstacles that immediately appear in Americans' eyes when they hear that word.
Well, I think you make a very, very good point. Social Security is extremely popular all across the political spectrum. Of course, it is a government program. Medicare is the most popular health insurance program in America, and of course it's a government program as well. And by the way, I'm currently chairman of the VA, and while the VA has had a rough Veterans Administration medical system has had a hard year. If you go out to veterans all across the country, they will tell you they're very supportive of VA healthcare, and they utilize it and they enjoy it very much. So your point is well taken, and what we are up against is a whole lot of money of folks who essentially want to privatize virtually every major government entity, whether it is Social Security, the VA, the U.S. Postal Service, or whatever it may be. And I think we fight back by explaining to the American people that in many instances, government programs are effective, they're cost-effective, and that they do a good job for the American people.
Thank you very much for that phone call, and thank you for the response, Senator. We're running a little bit short on time, so I just want to run a few other major ideas by you. You have called for a more humble U.S. foreign policy. On what issue would your foreign policy be more humble if you were to assume the presidency? President Obama, we should say, is criticized widely for not being interventionist enough.
Right. I would tell you, Lisa, that I think that the United States' intervention under Bush and Cheney into Iraq was one of the great foreign policy disasters in the history of the United States of America. And not only did it cost us some 7,000 lives between Iraq and Afghanistan and some $3 trillion, but it laid the groundwork for what we're seeing right now, which is, you know, mass chaos and upheavals throughout the region. So I think that the United States should not act unilaterally. I think certainly in the Middle East we should demand that the countries in the Middle East act aggressively to protect their own interests. And we, along with the rest of the world, the European Union, etc., should be supportive on issues like ISIS. But the idea that the United States should be unilaterally going around the world overthrowing governments, to me, is a pretty dumb idea.
Okay. I'm sure we'd have a lot of feedback on that, but I just want to move into one or two additional issues. And Martha from Cambridge brings up a good issue on line three. Hello, Martha.
Hi. I love the things you say. They're about important issues, but there's simply nothing as important as climate change. If we don't solve that, we almost might as well forget about the rest of it. And I'd like to know what you will do to work on that.
And thank you, Martha. And, Senator, we have under a minute.
You're absolutely right. And I should tell you that along with Senator Barbara Boxer of California and the author of the first piece of legislation to put a tax on carbon, I am a strong advocate of transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energies like wind, solar, and geothermal. Martha is absolutely right. The scientific community is virtually unanimous in saying climate change is real. It is already causing devastating problems. It is caused by human activity. So she's right. If we don't get that one right, a lot of other things aren't going to matter all that much. So I am I believe that we have got to be extremely aggressive in transforming our energy system.
Thanks to everybody who's called in on the line. Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye, and we hope to have you back sometime. Bernie Sanders, an independent, represents the state of Vermont in the U.S. Senate. Very nice to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. More of Radio Boston still to come. Stay with us.